Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to their great big Friday edition of Catholic Answers Live. I should warn you, it might get a little goofy today because it's flip-flop Friday here at Catholic Answers, where we were permitted to forego the wearing of shoes and just wear our flip-flops to work. Did you wear your flip-flops, Trent, or did you? You wore regular shoes.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I misunderstood because all day I've been saying, I am going to go out for lunch. I'm not going to go out for lunch.
Oh.
I am going to go out. I thought the point was we were supposed to waffle on a decision to flip and flop.
Did you say waffle? Well, no, that is
that's
actually
exactly what I was wondering. Should I go get a waffle or not? All day I've been flipping and flopping.
If there's one guy here, Trent Horn, that I think that's a guy that would really appreciate Flip Flop Friday, it's you.
Oh no, I do.
Like, you're casual. You like a casual look.
Yeah,
California.
I have been. Remarks have been made about how I have tried to make other days like Flip Flop Wednesday, Casual Tuesday.
Yeah. By just wearing whatever you want when you come in here. Is that what you mean?
The problem was I worked from home for 2 years.
Yeah.
So really, it was always like Pajama Friday, Pajama Thursday,
yeah,
Semi-Formal Wednesday.
Semi-Formal Wednesday,
you
gotta really?
You have to spice it up a little bit to get through hump day.
Do you have ruffles and a tux?
Well, just to know today is special. But otherwise, yeah, it's a lot different coming in an office, but it's a lot better because you stop being isolated and, you know, making volleyballs your friends and things like that.
If I could just tell you this, when I used to work for Immaculate Radio, I did a morning show and I did it from my home studio. And so I went in and started. And, you know, you talk to the engineer first before you go on the air. And he goes, oh, you work from home. You're probably working in your pajamas today. And then he felt bad and he's like, I'm sorry, that was disrespectful. I'm sure you're not in your pajamas. I was so in my pajamas at that time. I was, of course I'm wearing, it's radio. I can wear whatever I want.
Right. So I guess then the question there is, do you say anything? And is your stunned silence a kind of deception or lie? I don't think so.
I had to tell him. I mean, I think he felt bad. And I was like, no, I'm actually wearing pajamas right now. But today I'm wearing flip-flops and it might get a little goofy. But it's also a very serious day because we are asking our atheist listeners to call us and tell us why you are atheist. We enjoy talking with atheists. We are believers ourselves. Well, let me check in. You're still a believer, yes?
Yeah, I'm only on the flop, so I'm back to being a believer now. I should stick there for about 2 hours.
You can't flip-flop about that. You got to stay.
Well, you guys should have been more specific about what flip-flop Friday meant.
All right, sorry, next time.
Okay.
We'll be more careful in the memo.
Thank you.
If you are an atheist and you'd like to share with us why you are, we'd be happy to have that. As a matter of fact, we'd be delighted to have that conversation with you. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-31-TRUTH. Trent is our guest, and Trent is an apologist here at Catholic Answers, the author of many things, including Why We're Catholic, Persuasive Pro-Life, Hard Sayings, and probably most useful for today, Answering Atheism, which is your second most popular book, I found out today.
Really?
I didn't know that. Did you know that?
No, I did not
Carrie
know
told
that.
Me that. Yeah, it's second best-selling of your books, Answering Atheism. Can you guess what's first?
I know exactly which one couldn't possibly be first, but I've heard a lot of...
Can I give you a hint?
You can give me a hint.
It's not what saints never said. Sorry.
No, it's I had to take a guess, given the fact that it has about 148 reviews on Amazon, probably my book, Why We're Catholic.
Why We're Catholic, yeah.
Written for a broad audience.
Yeah.
And it's funny, actually. I'm speaking to a few people who have read What the Saints Never Said, and they all have the same reaction to it. They said, I really, really did not want to read your book, but then I did, and I really liked it.
Yeah, you know, because it's probably that there's more to it than people think there is. I think that might have been like when it says things the saints never said, I think a lot of people are like, oh, it's probably just like a few quotes that, you know, saints. But you get into the theology of what is sometimes said, okay, the saint said this. And you'll say, no, that saint didn't say that. And you'll explain where it actually comes from. And it's usually from some weird 19th century person we never heard of. And that's not really true. But then it's also
weird 20th century people.
Yeah. Like, hey, right. But then you'll explain either why, A, that's not even a Catholic thing. Like a Catholic a saint is very unlikely to have said anything like that, or why something else that the saint said is actually better, more adequate expression of that kind of thought. So I think there's that might be it. I don't know.
No, I think that people can see there, and I draw the true theology and also include things the saints really did say that we often overlook, the quotes we should be quoting. But I had no idea Answering Atheism was my number two best-selling book. So, yeah. I mean, I think that many people know atheists in their life. They have friends who identify as atheists or family members. And in fact, there are usually a fair number of atheists or agnostics or non-religious people who listen to our radio show. That's right. Why it'd be really awesome if they wanted to call in and, you know, why are you an atheist or agnostic, whatever term you use for yourself. It's a great conversation to have.
888-318-7884 is the number, 888-31-TRUTH. And if you would like to present us with a challenge that you would like us to take up, I'm perfectly comfortable with that because Trent will have to answer it. And so hit us with your best shot. But maybe you also just have a question that you're like, why? How could you believe this? Or I don't understand how religious belief works. And we can have a nice discussion. If you are an atheist, we welcome your call. 888-318-7884.
And who knows, maybe Pat Benatar will give a call right now because you said you wanted them to hit us with their best shot.
Yes. That's probably Pat Benatar's best song, is it? Do you even?
Or number two.
Or what's the number? What would be number one be? You really like 80s music, don't you?
I am kind of a fan.
I can't remember if that was 80s or 70s, though.
I want to say that it was 80s.
Hit me with your best shot. I'm a really good rock and roll singer.
Oh. But...
sorry.
Well, we can always talk about this later on. Yesterday, I was at Comic-Con, and they had a special panel on the nerdiest year of the 20th century. They considered it 1988.
That was the nerdiest year of the 20th century?
Or just something to look back on with fondness from nerddom. Movies like Die Hard, classic cult comedies like A Fish Called Wanda, a lot of, at least for like cult and nerdy films and iconic films, things like that. So that was just one of the interesting panels there. But we can always discuss Comic-Con fun another point in the show.
888-318-7884, the number. I do think, Trent, a lot of people who are atheists today... Mm. The kind of – I don't know what the motivation for it is. I suppose we'd never even fully know our own motivations for things. But but the explanation for it is connected to science, is connected to, well, science has made an adequate expression, exploration of things. And science is what I'm going to base my life on. That's why I don't believe in God.
Sure. I think that there is an idea that the most reliable form of knowledge we have, the one that if something is very important to us, we should entrust it to the scientific method, comes from the fact that science does have a lot of explanatory power. And I think a lot of people listening like science, and I myself as well, they really like it because of technology, not just for science's ability to discover new aspects of nature, give us new laws, things like that. We live in, you know, obviously the most technologically advanced age of all time, and technology has been a great time saver. It's allowed us to do things we've never been able to do before. And so we stand in awe of what man has been able to achieve with technology, and that's through applying scientific principles. But at the same time, just because something is very effective for us, just because it's able to accomplish a lot of good, doesn't mean we should put all of our eggs into that basket. Because, for example, there are really, really big questions that science just cannot answer, even with technology. Like, you might sit at home, you've got your smartphone, you've got your laptop, you have your GPS, you have all these great things that science has given you to learn, explore, do things in the world, but you might still sit there and think, what should I be doing with my life?
Yeah, right.
Why am I here? And then you sit there, and your phone and your computer and all your technology just kind of stares back at you. And if anything, it kind of distracts you from those important questions. And then you sit there and you're like, why was I on Instagram for 3 hours? What's going on? That it sucks you away from the questions that are very, very important about what am I? What is my purpose? Why is there anything at all? Is there a purpose for the universe or me? Where did everything come from? And those are philosophical questions that science can give us facts to help answer, but ultimately we have to apply philosophy to arrive at the final ultimate truth.
So is that what you're going to be talking about at the conference? Because you know we got the big conference coming up. It's Faith in Science conference.
I will be talking about science, but not Instagram. I still don't totally understand it. I think it's for people who are attractive and go on vacation in very sepia-toned places.
Are there sepia-toned places?
That's what I seem to see on Instagram.
I think that might be a filter. I don't know.
I wouldn't know. I'm not on Instagram. I don't know.
But you are going to be at the conference.
I will be at the conference.
Well, anyway, I just want to let people know while we're on it. Faith in Science, Friends or Foes, September 27th through 30th at the Hyatt Regency La Jolla, right here in beautiful sunny San Diego. It's being organized by our own Erica Olson. She used to be – well, never mind. She's Erica Olson now. Hi, Erica.
Hi.
So tell us, how's it going with the conference? Can people still come or is it sold out?
I'm curious what I used to be.
Used to be not married and not Olson.
Used to be not married and not Olson.
Now we call you Mrs. Olson.
I know. Some people call me Sanchez, and I think that's really confusing because that was never my last name, but that's okay.
I know. I think I did that to you once, but
a lot of people.
In any case, Mrs. Olson.
Thank you.
Do we still have spots available or no?
We do. We have spots available. They are going fast, especially the full ticket. I want to stress that today. The full ticket only has a limited amount of seats, and that's where you're going to be able to hear Cardinal Burke speak. He's giving his keynote address at the banquet dinner. And the banquet dinner only has a limited number of seats, and those are going fast. So if you want to listen to that speech, you need to get a full ticket, and you need to get in now. The other thing I want to stress is that we did run out of our room block.
Oh.
It's 100% sold out. However, we were able to still get a limited amount of rooms added to the room block.
Oh, so you can still get the...
You can't get the 149 rate. It's at 179, but that's still about $50 or $60 less than you would pay at the regular site, at the regular hotel rate. So we still have a discount on it, but we only have a limited number of added rooms to that block. So you want to make sure if you're coming from out of town, you want to get those rooms booked fast. Because I only have a handful left.
Okay. You go to CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Yes.
That's how you sign up. We'd love to see you there. It's already looking like it's going to be one of the greatest conferences ever. I mean,
it's our most well-attended so far.
But it's already the biggest Catholic Answers Conference we've ever done. So I'm going to just list some things. You tell me if these things are going to be there or not. Jimmy Akin square dancing.
Yes.
Jimmy Akin M&Ms.
Yes.
We already said Cardinal Burke keynote.
Yes.
Parachuting off the building.
Absolutely. By Cy Kellett.
That's not happening. I thought you were going to tell the truth. All right, Erica, thanks.
Sorry, no skydiving.
All right, we're going to talk to atheists.
Thanks for having me.
I think it would be base jumping.
Base jumping?
Base jumping off the Hyatt. So probably would void our insurance policy with them.
Might void our life. I don't know. I'm pretty sure if I did it, it would.
Those things too. But priorities, Cy, priorities.
Yes, right. The most important thing is the insurance. 888-318-7884 is the number. We've had our fun. We'd like you to have your fun. Give us a call, 888-318-7884. If you are an atheist, an agnostic, an unbeliever, a free thinker, a bright, or however you put it, we'd love to talk with you about your atheism. Give us a call, 888-318-7884. Trent Horn, our guest, will be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Divine Intimacy Radio.
When you engage with the wisdom of saints this way, it stokes the fires of God in our hearts, encourages us, strengthens us, and gives us wisdom to deal with the difficulties of life. It also gives us wisdom that allows us to rise above all of the junk, to live with joy and peace in the midst of even the most difficult circumstances.
Divine Intimacy Radio, Sunday, 6:30 a.m., 1:30 p.m., and 11 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to the faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Why are you an atheist? That's our question of the day today. If you're an atheist and you'd like to share with us why you're an atheist, why you don't believe in God, 888-318-7884 is our number. Trent Horn, the author of Answering Atheism, How We Can Make the Case for God with Logic and Charity, is our guest this hour and next. And we got lots of calls. Trent, are you ready?
Sure.
You're prepared? All right. Kiefer, St. Joseph, Missouri, listening on 106.1 FM. Why are you an atheist, Kiefer?
I'm an atheist. I used to be Catholic for a long time. I'm an atheist now because I took some time and was honest with myself and said, do you really believe what you say you believe? And I struggled with it for a long time, a crippling fear of hell. And I remember being a child laying in bed at night crying, praying, saying, I believe, I swear I believe. But just like I couldn't convince you to believe in Santa Claus, you could say you believe in Santa Claus, but you don't really believe in Santa Claus because you trust evidence and you trust what you can see. And the fact of the matter is I tried talking to priests about it. I tried talking to my parents about it. And it always came back to faith. It always came back to you have to have faith. And I always said there is no position on earth that I could take or that I could not take based on faith. I could think that black people are better than white people and say, I take that on faith, and that's all I need is faith. Faith is the excuse people give when they don't have a justified reason for believing in something.
Okay.
I know you guys say that faith is the belief in the unseen, but it's the exact same thing. If I can't see it, I can't measure it, there's no way for me to manifest it in reality, then that's taking it on faith, and I simply cannot lie to myself and do that.
Lie to yourself. Okay, let me sort through a little bit of this here, Kiefer, so we can have a good conversation on the different things that you brought up. One point relates to faith and the other relates to Santa Claus. Let's talk about faith for a minute. How do you define the term faith? Because from my understanding, the term faith in common parlance, common usage of it, refers to having a trust or a confidence in someone or something. You know, I have faith that the bridge we're driving on won't collapse. I have faith in this thing that I built. It's sturdy. I have faith in John that he will finish our group project. I have faith in God that he will save me from my sins and that he's really revealed himself to me. So do you think there's anything wrong with defining faith simply as it's a kind of trust or confidence in someone or something?
No, yes, you're completely perverting the term of faith, and especially how I'm using it.
Okay,
no.
Well, how would you define faith then?
Hang on, let me finish. Well, let me finish my sentence, and I can get to that.
Okay.
If I'm driving on a bridge, like you say, I don't have faith that it's not going to collapse. I have a justified reason to believe it's not going to collapse because either I have driven over this bridge many times before, I see cars driving over it before right now, I have at no time in my life ever seen a bridge collapse, so I have justified evidence to tell me that, hey, you can cross this bridge. I do not have a single shred of that to believe that there is a divine genie in the sky guiding with my life. So, no. Saying that I have faith that the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl this year. I suppose you could say that, but the definition of faith, having faith in a God, having blind faith in a God, the way that you are currently using it, no, that is not how I use the word faith, and that's not how most, if not every, atheist uses the word faith.
So, just to summarize, so you're saying, just one sentence, what is, so are you saying that you don't have faith in anything, or you do have faith, but it's some kind of trust based on evidence?
I have justified reasoning based on evidence to that, for specific outcomes that guide me through my life. I do not have blind faith in anything.
Well, it seems to me
the way that you use the word faith.
Right. Well, Kiefer, it seems interesting because you use the term blind faith. It seems like you're using an adjective to show us there's a bad kind of faith, which is blind faith. Rather, other kinds of faith are just trust. And we can have faith that's blind or faith that's built on something that's solid. You have faith the bridge won't collapse based on previous experience with it. Though I will say that I don't think that's necessarily, I mean, that's common reasoning is what we use, but it's not absolute. It reminds me of the story of Bertrand Russell and the chickens, that the chickens were all in Mrs. O'Henry's yard And they said to one another, you know, every day we've been out here, Mrs. O'Henry comes out and gives us the chicken feed, and she's always done that. So surely that's what she's going to do today, because that's what she's always done. And then Mrs. O'Henry went out and cut their heads off. That just because things have always been a certain way in the past, it doesn't follow they'll be that way in the future. So I think that you and I can actually agree. I think that people should believe things based on good reasons, and I think there's good reasons to believe that God exists and that God created the world, and I'm happy to talk to you about that. You and I have an agreement. You just shouldn't have blind faith. You shouldn't have just believing something just because you want it to be true. I do think people can believe in God because they've had a personal experience of God. If God exists, he can reveal himself to someone. That might not convince you, but you don't have access to that person's heart. But I think that you can have good reasons for believing in God. Has anyone ever shared, besides just faith, has anyone ever shared those kinds of reasons with you?
I went to 12 years of Catholic school. I had 2 hours of Bible study every day. I went to Mass twice a week. I read the Bible from cover to cover twice in my life.
Okay.
I have sat down and discussed my atheism with priests, with Protestants, my Protestant wife's family, their preacher. I've talked to everybody, and everybody seems to go to the Bible, and then I hit them with, well, how do we know that anything in the Bible is true? And it comes back around. It always turns into circular arguments from the theistic side. It always turns into something like that. And then this is just one last thing. Whenever I go through my life, whenever you go through your life or anybody goes through their life, there's not a single thing that we use strictly faith for. And if I were to tell you, I have a purple dragon in my garage right now, and you should take that on faith, you're not going to say, okay, well, I believe you. You're going to say, well, show me the evidence. And then I say, it's personal experience. The dragon has to reveal itself to you. Mm-hmm. You just have to really, really pray really hard and have faith in this purple dragon, and he will reveal himself to you. And I'm sorry. Saul was good enough for a Damascus Road conversion. Evidently, I'm not. And if there is a God, he knows exactly what it would take to convince me, and he either doesn't exist or he has chosen not to reveal himself.
Are you willing just to examine an argument for God and just follow reason, that if there's an argument and there's no errors in the reasoning and the premises are true, that it could lead to a conclusion that there's an ultimate creator of reality that we call God? Are you willing
Absolutely not. That's another common apologetic.
Wait. You don't believe in philosophical arguments? You don't believe in logic?
Let me finish my sentence before you put words in my mouth. What I am saying is logic is a tool that was invented by human beings to help us walk through our everyday lives and determine which path to take. However, just because something can sound reasonable in an argument, just because you can connect the dots from A to B to C to D, whatever you want to do, like for an argument with God, just because it may sound logical, it sounds like it makes sense, that does not mean it is true. You get published, and you show me
Kiefer, can I ask you a question?
God,
Kiefer,
and then I will listen.
Kiefer, by that reasoning then, could I say just because your atheistic claim on the show sounds reasonable doesn't mean it's true?
You don't have to believe what I here's the difference is I'm not trying to preach my beliefs to you. You asked me to call you and explain my position.
Absolutely. And
I couldn't care less more what you believe or what anybody believes for that matter. Well, the fact of the matter is I have to be honest with myself, and I can't convince myself to believe in Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster or Santa Claus or Jesus any more than than you could.
I don't mean to cut you off. It's just because of live radio, we have time constraints and we have a break coming up. Is it okay? I know you said you don't care about what I believe. Is it okay for me to care about what you believe? Because I think that if God exists and we're created in his image, so if we have immortal souls, we will live forever. And I would like you to spend forever with God and to be happy forever. So is it okay for me to care about what you believe and try to give you reasons to believe what I believe to share in that really, really good thing?
So once again, that kind of comes back around to a threat, believe in God or else. I don't necessarily, depending on what God you're talking about, if you're talking about the God of the Abrahamic religions,
Kiefer, how is my saying that I want to share something that makes me happy and can make you happy forever a threat? Isn't that just a wonderful, gracious offer? How is that a threat in any way?
Well, because of the implications. What happens to me if I say no, if I say I do not believe in God? In your belief, the thing that makes you happy, what is the consequence if I say no?
It's possible you might spend eternity apart from God, but that would be something that we all can freely choose. I'd like to help you not do that. Unfortunately, we have a lot of other callers. If you'd like to stay on the line, Kiefer, please stay on the line. We'll get your email. I'll send you a copy of my book, Answering Atheism, and then you can always call back and we can discuss that, okay? So please stay on the line. We'll send you a book of reasons. Then you can call back and we can discuss those.
Thanks, Kiefer. Right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Don't you just love listening to Trent Horn on Catholic Answers Live? Did you know that you can arrange for Trent or any of our great speakers to come and speak at your next conference or parish event? You can book Trent online today at CatholicAnswerSpeakers.com or by calling one of our seminar coordinators now at 619-387-7200 to get more information.
In a culture that worships the pursuit of sexual pleasure, the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception can seem archaic and unintelligible. Its critics say it is outdated, theologically unfounded, and even harmful. And even faithful Catholics can have difficulty explaining this moral teaching. Catholic Answers is out to change all that. That's why we've just released Trent Horn's dynamic new DVD, The Case Against Contraception, using scripture, papal and magisterial teaching, natural law, and new insights provided by social science and medicine, Trent put forward a compelling case for Catholic teaching with his trademark charity and persuasive graciousness. Be prepared to give a defense. Order your copy of The Case Against Contraception today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging onto the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about a very special promotion we look forward to every year, our annual store-wide summer sale in the online shop at Catholic.com. This spectacular online event includes savings of 10 to 25% and more in some cases on every book, tract, CD, DVD, ebook, and MP3 we carry, including my new book, What the Saints Never Said. With lower prices and a great selection, it's by far the best online Catholic sale of the summer. So log on now and all this month to the shop at shop.catholic.com and take advantage of our very special prices. You know it's all good stuff because it's from the people you know and trust at Catholic Answers.
I'm Tom Price.
And I'm Gloria Purvis. Monday, we'll bring you all the Catholic news of the day, along with interviews with newsmakers and our godly counsel.
Join us for Morning Glory, 7 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Phillott, your host. Trent Horn is our guest. Trent is an apologist here at Catholic Answers, a speaker and debater extraordinaire, author of 613 different books, or roughly that. That's a rough.
613?
Yeah.
I did not write. Maybe you must have been reading the Torah a little bit much. That's I don't know if you picked that number at random, but that's the number of prohibitions and commandments in the Torah that a Jew is obliged to follow.
I wonder if that was that was in my consciousness somewhere. I don't know.
613.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you did not write the commandments, though. I'm fairly certain of that.
Yeah.
But you did write some books, including Answering Atheism. Yes. And we're talking with atheists today. If you're an atheist and you'd like to share with us why you are an atheist, we'd love that. 888-318-7884 is the number. We go to an anonymous caller in Boston, Massachusetts. Next, Anonymous, you are on with Trent. Why are you an atheist?
Hello. Can you hear me there?
We can, yes.
Okay. First, I'd like to know, what's your definition of an atheist? Because you haven't described that for your audience.
Well, sure, Anonymous. I have a particular definition, but more I want people to call in who call themselves atheists or agnostics, and I know the definition differs from people. I would define an atheist this way. An atheist is someone who says who does not believe in God for one of two reasons. One, because there is no God, or two, because there are no arguments or evidences that convince the person God exists. So they don't believe in God for one of those two reasons.
Okay, that seems reasonable there, because there are, within the atheist community, I just wanted to make sure that the theist community is communicating properly to your own members who atheists are, instead of who you're painting us to be. So, yes, I am an atheist because I haven't been convinced that the supernatural exists. But I'm also an anti-theist as well, because I don't find religion beneficial to society. But as for my atheism, if that's even really a term, which I don't really believe the word atheism is a thing, because there's no tenets or dogma or leadership worship or anything at all like that within the atheist community. We're individuals who just happen to have not been convinced yet of the existence of the supernatural.
Well, Anonymous, I mean,
there are no,
right, but Anonymous, you would say that within the sphere of politics, there are a group of people who simply reject the idea of government, and they would be called anarchists. They're people who don't believe in ordered government, and we would place those in that sphere when studying the issue of government. And then when it comes to God, they're just the people who don't believe in God because of either a lack of evidence or they say God does not exist. So, you know, it's like an atheist, one who rejects God, is like an anarchist, one who rejects government. I'm not saying atheists are anarchists. I'm just saying that it is a kind of system, even if they're only united in what they reject.
That's okay. Then there's a system for atheism is the default position everybody's born into. So you're suggesting that there's a system where everybody, before they're convinced of something,
no, because the way I defined atheism, and then hopefully we don't have to spend a ton of time on this. An atheist is a person who does not believe in God. One, because they think God does not exist, or two, they have not found the evidence or arguments presented to them compelling. They are not convinced by the arguments or evidences for the existence of God. And I think an implicit assumption into that is an atheist is someone who is capable of understanding God and of understanding the arguments for God, but rejects them. They reject the existence of God. They make a claim. They have encountered something. And so they reject it for one or more reasons. And my question is, I wonder, why did they reject those certain things, like the arguments for or the evidences for the existence of God that believers have postulated? That's what I'm interested in finding out.
Okay. Well, as an atheist, I don't believe there's any evidence of the supernatural. There are arguments that people put forth, logical conclusions that bring them to conclude that that the likelihood of the supernatural is being there, mm-hmm. but there's no actual evidence that I've ever been exposed to that shows causality between this evidence to it being responsible based on the supernatural.
Well, by evidence. I wonder if you just mean something we have identified in nature, a fact, something we observe that's physical with a microscope or a telescope. Because I would agree, because God is immaterial, eternal, if he exists beyond space and time and is not composed of matter, we can't directly detect God. We have to infer his existence through a philosophical argument to show he's the foundation of reality itself. And so I think that philosophical arguments have their place. Do you think that you could use logical reasoning to start from what we do observe, like in the universe, to a creator of the universe in the same way we look at a painting or some other created thing and logically infer a creator or a painter? So do the arguments, is it possible that they succeed? And then if so, maybe we could talk about one of them.
Sure. The way that we contrast creation from nature is we look at nature that is, by definition, not created. But theists go into the existence of everything to say that that's a creation, the way that a painting is a creation from an individual. But we know that a painting is a creation from an individual because that doesn't naturally occur in nature.
Sure.
Nature is the contrast. But the theists are claiming all of reality is the painting. Well, there's nothing to contrast all of reality against something that was not created for there to be a creation.
Well, I think that we can still make this comparison, that like with a painting, we see an arrangement of colors towards a certain end that either can't happen naturally or the odds of them happening naturally are incredibly slim, practically none. And so there's different arguments one can make for the existence of God based on those two things. So just as paintings don't come into existence from nothing, they're caused. If the universe itself came into existence from nothing, it too would have some kind of creative cause, and we would deduce the nature of that cause. Much the same, our universe, you know, if the odds of having a universe where life can even exist at all, and this has been discovered in the past 50 years by physicists who've seen that if the laws of nature were tweaked ever so slightly at the molecular level, if they were the, you know, we're talking about factors in the in 1 in 10 to the 100th power, that if the laws of physics were altered, there would not be a life-permitting universe at all. Well, if the odds of getting a random splotch of paint to recreate the Mona Lisa or winning, you know, 10 royal flushes in a row in a hand of poker, if you're more likely to get that than a universe where life can even exist at all, then that would actually count in favor that our universe is not accidental. And so that's another argument for God, dealing with the fine-tuning of the fundamental elements of the universe. So those are two things we could talk about, either the tuning of the very laws of physics themselves, or if the universe came from nothing in the finite past, both of which I think point to God.
Sure, we could go into those if you like, but you know, how long is your program for these calls?
We have about 3 minutes until our next break, so we could pick either one and talk about them. Maybe we should pick one, and then we could discuss
it. All right, I can do fine-tuning real quick.
Sure.
Numbers are just adjectives that we use to describe the experienced reality, and these astronomical numbers seem astronomical based on a reference of human beings, on how limited we are in our own precisions for how precise we can be.
Okay.
If you want to say something is x to the 10 minus 10 billionth power, well, so what? That's just the number that describes that function of reality. That's just what it is. For that to be able even to be considered to be changeable, you have to understand how universes are created, which we don't, to know if those numbers are changeable at all. And besides, if I have, for an example of precision, I can have two apples sitting on my desk. That's two followed by one to the infinity amount of zeros. That's more precise than your fine-tuning numbers.
Wait, I don't follow you. Anonymous, I don't quite understand. Two followed by a decimal point and an infinite number of zeros is the same as two followed by one zero. You're just describing the same thing in two different ways. Now the odds of taking an apple and throwing it into a blender and then you pour out the chunks and it spells, don't eat me, well, I think we would do much higher exponential odds there of something like that happening that has some kind of value built into it. And if there's even greater odds that we would not have a universe with something as valuable as life in it, you know, that, for example, the odds of getting the force of gravity just right, the odds of that particular force being right so you can have a life-permitting universe, you are more likely to have found a random atom somewhere in the known universe that's marked than you would to get gravity right for there to be life. So I think that if we see something happening against all conceivable odds that produces something with value like us, that should clue us into some kind of design. I don't think the example you gave with the apples and the decimal points really relates to that.
I disagree, because we're applying significance to the idea that the life is the purpose of the universe because of the idea, which is one reason why I'm anti-religious is because it's egocentric. It assumes that we are the result, the purpose of this universe. We're no more the purpose of this universe than we are for black holes. It seems universes are created for black holes than they are for us. Mm-hmm. It seems like the universe is created for non-life than it is for life. And because that's just spelled out just from experiencing reality. Mm-hmm. But we value life because we understand our mortality. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be assigned to us, but we value the things that are important to our survival. Mm-hmm. And so obviously we would be afraid of a universe that has different gravitational constants where we wouldn't be the result of that because we wouldn't exist. Mm-hmm. And we're afraid of non-existence because we value being alive.
Right.
Religion is putting its value judgments onto reality and therefore saying it's important because we're here. That's the egocentricness mm-hmm. of religion and what it teaches.
Well,
it assumes that we are...
Sure. Anonymous, I would disagree with you on that point that we notice this because we're afraid of our own mortality or something like that. Even non-religious astronomers and physicists ask this very same question because it's incredibly peculiar. It's just incredibly peculiar that of all the different kinds of universes that we have, and I agree with you that the vast numbers of them would have things like space in them. Or objects. But the fact that this tiny sliver of a tiny sliver, an infinitesimal sliver of nothing would have life in it when it could be completely different, when it really just should be different, much cries out for an explanation. And a good book on this by people who are non-religious would be the book Just Six Numbers by Martin Rees, for example, the British Royal Astronomer, that even non-religious scientists try to figure out, well, why is it this case? Instead of saying, well, it's just some kind of a coincidence. Because, you know, we might say, let's say, you know, we see a group of people playing poker. They used the poker example earlier. And one of the guys wins 10 games with 10 royal flushes in a row. People are going to ask, well, how did he do that? How did that happen? And imagine if we just responded, well, why does that matter? You're only asking that because you're mad that you lost money. If you weren't in this poker game or you didn't lose money, you weren't involved, you wouldn't really care. And yet we certainly do care because of all the different ways it could turn out. It's incredibly rare it would go to this with something that has. And I do think life has intrinsic value. Most people do recognize that. Even atheists agree. And so some kind of explanation requires itself that if we think that poker game is rigged because the odds are so against it coming out, you know, 10 royal flushes in a row, I think we should think the universe is equally rigged in the same way because it's even more improbable we should have a life-permitting universe. Martin Rees has a book on that, though. I think there is a gentleman who wrote a book on this. It's like something called The Improbable Universe. I think I can find it really quick here that I would recommend. It's Luke Barnes. He wrote a book called A Fortunate Universe. So I think that'd be...
Anonymous, we have to take our break as well. If you want, it's entirely up to you. Hang on the line and give your if you want this, just give your address to Marie and we'll send you Trent's book, Answering Atheism. It's at least something you can engage with if you'd like to. And call back when you've if there's something you want to challenge or question Trent about when he is on again. Because one of the things that happened around here is Trent's on. Like every week, it just keeps happening. We try to stop it, but it just keeps happening. So, Anonymous, I really appreciate the tenor of that call. It's a great privilege to talk to you. I'm sorry that we have to move on. And if anybody wants to buy Answering Atheism, did you know it's among the things that are on sale right now, Trent?
I did not know that.
There's like about a – I was going to exaggerate, but there's a lot of books, tracks, CDs, DVDs, digital products, all that stuff over at shop.catholic.com, which is our shop. And stuff there is 10, 25% off right now, maybe even more than 25% off on some things. You don't need a promo code. You just go, you shop, you save. Hundreds of great resources on sale. Go now to shop.catholic.com. We'll be right back with more. Why Are You an Atheist? With Trent Horn right after this.
Among the many arguments relativists give to prove their worldview, one is that moral beliefs change. For example, they might say, we used to believe slavery was okay, but now we don't. If there were moral absolutes, well, then moral beliefs wouldn't change. How do we respond? Well, we can ask the relativists if we've morally progressed in changing our country's slavery laws. Assuming they say yes, we can point out the fact that progress implies an objective moral standard that our society better conforms to today than it did 150 plus years ago. But if there's an objective moral standard that we've progressed toward, well then morality is not relative. So the relativist either has to give up on the idea that we've progressed morally in order to keep relativism, or reject relativism to keep the idea of moral progress. I'm Carlo Broussard with The Ready Reason for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
And I wanted to tell you guys how great your show is because I listen to you guys for every day for the last past 5.5 months. It's because of you guys that I came to the Catholic faith. Now I'm going to church on Sunday for the first time because I just got out yesterday from jail. And I got my mom to go too. And my girlfriend is also going with me. Wow. She's willing to give the Catholic faith a try.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic. Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much for being with us. I am Cy Kellett, your host. It is Flip Flop Friday here at Catholic Answers, so I'm not wearing shoes. And Trent Horn is our guest. We're talking with atheists about why are you an atheist? And if you're an atheist and you'd like to call and share that with us, we really enjoy the conversation. Just give a call, 888-318-7884. John in Los Alamitos, California, listening on the Catholic Answers app is up next. John, thank you so much for your call. Why are you an atheist, John?
Well, I, you know what, I think I might have just, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah,
sure.
Okay. I used to be Christian, and I liked the lifestyle. I really didn't have any problem with it, but I really started to believe that a lot of this was really about making ourselves feel better about a really rather bad situation in the universe. And I did read Trent's book, Answering Atheism.
Okay.
I thought it was a really well-written book. I recommend it to both atheists and Christian people alike. And in the book, he kind of talks about, you know, moral values. If there were no God, there wouldn't be these moral values. And he could probably explain it a lot better than I could. And I read that and I was kind of like almost convinced, yeah, that's why we make up religion, is because we're so uncomfortable with that we get like 70 to 90 years of existence. And that's only if we're very, very lucky. A lot of people get far less than that. And then poof, we're gone forever. There's no further existence. It's just this blackness for eternity. And, you know, if a child is murdered, we want there to be some justice in the afterlife for this child, and then we want some punishment for the murderer who may, if there's not evidence to convict him in a secular court, he would get away with this with no punishment at all. And then I think we're just so uncomfortable with the experience of a person like Adolf Hitler being exactly the same after death. Uh-huh. As the experience of a 2-year-old that dies of leukemia. Or
okay, well, John, let me jump in here because I want to challenge an assumption that I think is lying behind your question or your argument. It seems to be that we shouldn't trust a belief if we believe it because it makes us happy. I'm not sure that that follows at all. We mustn't confuse the source of a belief or motives behind a belief with whether the belief is true or false. So, you know, when I believe that my wife has been faithful to our marriage vows, that certainly makes me very happy to believe that. But that doesn't mean, well, you only believe that so that you can have a happy marriage. Well, yes, it does give me a happy marriage, but also there's evidence behind that belief, and it's a good thing. So I think just because a belief makes us feel better, it doesn't follow that we simply invented it in order to make ourselves feel better. I also think that this would count against some aspects of Christian theology, like the idea that you could go to hell. Because if you prefer, because with naturalism or atheism, when you die, no matter how bad you are, you know, you could have, you know, you just poof out of existence, right? So if we want to invent beliefs to make us feel better, I don't know why people would invent a hell that they could end up falling into. Maybe a hell for somebody like Hitler, but not for themselves. So I think that would be my thought there. Do you see where I'm coming from? That just because a belief gives us comfort, that doesn't mean we should be be so suspicious or ready to reject the belief. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, and it's a good point. And, but at the same time, because a belief makes us feel comfortable, does not mean it's true.
Sure, absolutely.
If a man believes his wife is being faithful, that doesn't actually mean she is in fact being faithful.
That's correct. And John, what the man would do is in that case, he'd say, "What's the evidence for?" And there's not really any evidence against. And so you've reached a good conclusion there. And of course, that's concluding about a certain person's human behavior. When it comes to God, we argue in a similar way. We'd say, okay, well, what's the evidence for God existing? And is there anything just as serious or just as compelling, if not more compelling, that he does not exist? And I don't think that there's compelling evidence he doesn't. I'm glad you like the book, and we can always talk about it a little more. The point I was making about moral values, and you seem to hone in on this a little bit, about that if God does not exist, I believe people can have their own subjective moral values. I mean, there's things we like or dislike, things I wish Cy would do, things he probably wishes that I would do.
The dishes.
Right. but my argument in that chapter of the book was that there's these weird things in our universe I call moral facts. Objective moral values, objective is another term for them, but I think moral facts is easier to understand. And that would be that there are these facts, or really these commands for us written in the universe. There's these laws of nature that tell us not just what we will happen if we act a certain way, not just what we will do, but what we should do. Like there are these moral commands that transcend humanity itself. So the idea that there is this one physical fact that, you know, the Earth is 93 million miles away from the sun. Or here's another physical fact. If you push grandma over the cliff, she will accelerate to terminal velocity and increase, and she will fall to Earth according to the law of gravity. The law of gravity says you push someone over a cliff, they fall down. The law of morality would say with just as much factual certainty, you must not do that. And so for me, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this, that sounds like a command. But a command is only relevant to me if it comes from a person with authority. Like my 3-year-old gives me commands all the time, and I hardly obey them. I tell him he has to make a request instead. But if I was in the army and a general gave me a command, that'd be a different story. So what are the source of these moral commands if they bind every single human being in all time and place? It seems to me like these commands, like it is always wrong to rape someone. It is always wrong to torture children for fun. These commands got to come from a perfect person or a perfect source of morality. And that pushes a dial, I think, heavily towards God. So that's what I was getting at in that part of the book and you alluded to. I don't know what you think of that.
Yeah, no, and, you know, the example of the rape, you know, nobody wants to be the person that says, you know, rape in certain circumstances might be acceptable. The Russian army in World War II, when they were reoccupying land taken over from the Nazis,
right,
and going into Germany, they thought rape was perfectly acceptable.
But they were wrong.
Rape German women.
Right. Well, John,
I'm sorry to jump in, but it just cries out for they were wrong,
yes,
right?
I guess, John, yeah, that would be the question. And this is, rape has been a weapon used for centuries, millennia, really. People who think it's okay to rape others, are they wrong?
Where do those moral... So to me as an atheist, though,
right,
it's a great question. Where do those moral values come from, those moral facts? I like that word.
Right.
Where do these moral facts come from?
That's right.
You know, and I think Trent would very well argue that they come from God, that he imprints these moral facts on our soul. As an atheist, I obviously couldn't argue that because I don't believe in God.
But this is interesting. John, this is interesting. I'm sorry. We're at the end of our show, and definitely call back. There is an atheist named J.L. Mackey who said, yeah, if these moral facts exist, there'd be a God. But there is no God, so I reject the moral facts. But if you don't reject them, according to Mackey, who is an atheist, if you accept them, God goes along with that package. Something to think about.
John, we're at the end of this hour. Thank you so much for that call. Thanks for everybody who called. If you're on the line, stay on the line because Trent will be with us for our second hour as well. And we will continue our conversation with atheists, asking you, why are you an atheist? We'd love to have that conversation with you. If you haven't called and you'd like to share with us why you are an atheist, 888-318-7884 is the number. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Why Are You an Atheist with Trent Horn on Catholic Answers Live right after this.